chest.
Everyone got one. What's your opinion? This is the rare room. Tongues won't be bit. Ain't no rules. Just spill it and anybody can get it. No limit. We get to kill it. You tuning into the thrillers. And no, ain't no stopping. Any topic, even the random.
We get to win.
I hope that you're ready. We entering in the zone soon. We on a grown shit. Welcome to the rare room.
That's it.
Yeah, what's up, y'all? It's your boy, Hilliard Guest. You guys are listening to the Screenwriters Rant Room. Will we keep it real? We keep it opinionated. We keep it what, Lisa?
2017. Okay, we got it right. Damn. We got it right. We survived. We survived.
We made it.
We got out of 2016.
Now we're here, right?
Oh, my God. 2016 was like the worst in so many ways, but now it's fresh, new.
So fresh and so
clean. So
clean.
I know. Yes, it's so wonderful. So
you guys know how we're doing on the Rant Room. On this show, we discuss entertainment, TV, film, music, culture, but our focus is always screenwriting, stories, craft, and shit like that.
Mm-hmm.
So you hear her voice, mm-hmm. Lisa Bulacaja,
yeah,
the Street Nerdist.
I'm back. I'm back from my silent meditation retreat.
Oh, that's right.
Yes, right. So I was on.
You can talk.
Know,
if you want.
As y'all know,
it's just us. We just chat.
It's just yes. Chat. Don't worry. Chat. So yeah. So I was out in Joshua Tree in the desert, mm-hmm. and so
what you was doing?
We was silent, which is what I love. Shut the hell up.
For how long?
4.5 days.
Ooh, that's a long time.
And yeah, so it was like, you know, through the New Year's and mm-hmm. all that stuff too. And it's like nothing but vegan food. So they cook for you and everything.
Okay.
So we had yoga early in the morning, yoga at night. We had meditations all throughout the day, whatever you want to do. I was walking out in the desert.
Chuck
I was
said
journaling.
He wanted to go.
I was writing. It was wonderful. And I was upset when I had to leave and come back and have to talk to people. You know, I was glad it was 2017, but it's like, damn it, I got to drive down here and talk to some human beings now. I was like meditating with cactus and Joshua trees themselves. And
it was
and
cold.
Like, I was, no, it wasn't that cold.
It wasn't really,
you know, I'm used to being outdoors, so it wasn't cold. Like I was walking out on a little meditation, like, you have a little meditation walk from by myself. So they have like 400 acres, so you can just go anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm walking, and then my instincts came in. I said, I hear something, and I saw a coyote. And a rabbit, and they both stopped. They were in the midst of predator prey work.
Oh, really?
But then they heard me, and
you
it was
I saved the day.
No, and I took out my camera, so I need to take a picture of this. And I took the picture. You can't really see them, they're far away. But it was that moment where we were all in tune, where I was the apex predator and the coyote. And the moment we had that moment where we all stopped and mm-hmm. looked at one, it was like one of those weird moments where mm-hmm. literally they were in the midst, he was chasing it. And then they heard me, and they both stopped, and we all looked at each other.
That's
and I'm
right.
like, we're here in this moment together.
You're like, go on, do your shit. I'm gonna take
but go
picture.
On, I'm gonna take this picture though. Good luck, rabbit.
Go ahead. Wait.
They legalized pot. I knew this kind of thing.
You know, but yes, I'm back. It's a new year. I'm excited. New big things are going on. Shout out to we're gonna talk about it today, mm-hmm. but shout out to Queen Viola.
Yes.
Getting her star on the Walk mm-hmm. of Fame. So you know I'll be out there scrubbing it down, taking pictures, making sure people ain't stepping
sanitizing
on it.
That motherfucker.
Yes, you know, don't you step on it.
Mm-hmm.
And on top of that, just Hidden Figures. Just mm-hmm. an amazing I saw it twice yesterday.
Damn.
I went in the morning.
She be going in, Chad.
Look, I went
this
in the morning.
The fan we're talking about, right?
I went
now.
In the morning, and then 3 hours later I went again and took my friend.
Really?
Both theaters we were in two different parts of the city in San mm-hmm. Diego.
Packed. Good.
And it wasn't just black folk.
Good.
Like, it was packed. People
mm-hmm.
had their kids.
Mm-hmm.
And each time at the end, everybody applauded. Like,
good.
It was so good.
Yeah, it's a very moving
mm-hmm. It's
film.
Moving.
Yeah.
It's,
you saw it too?
Yeah, I saw it over
okay.
the holiday.
Pharrell did the music. It's amazing. I want all of Janelle Monáe's clothes in that movie. She looked fabulous. Like, we just need a whole, like, outfits in Target somewhere, cheap, where I can afford it, that look like her outfits
it's
from
gonna,
the
like, bring
period.
Back that Mad Men
oh,
era
God,
again. Now
yes!
The, like, the Hidden Figures look.
Look, she had the little belts and the hairdos. Oh, it was fabulous. Fabulous movie. But I'm glad we're back, and we got somebody who's been with us
yes,
before who has some exciting news. Hi, Chuck.
Round two.
Happy 2017.
Thank you. Thank you. You too. So, welcome to the show,
mm-hmm.
my man,
mm-hmm.
my big bro,
mm-hmm.
my home team.
Mm-hmm.
how many hyphens you got, Chuck?
Wait, we walked into the lot.
I never have too
Wait,
many.
We walked into the lot, and I looked at Chuck like, oh, there's Chuck. And Chuck just looked at me, do I know you?
No, I thought it was you, but I didn't want to be the guy
no.
to say, hey, and then I was wrong.
Well, no, but the new guy was checking at the gate stuff. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to disturb. He'd be yeah. like, whatever. And then he was walking. I was like, well, maybe that wasn't Chuck. I thought that was Chuck.
Well, that's what I was thinking. I thought it was Lisa, but then she would have said something to me. She knew
but
it was
I had
me,
to stop and talk to the new dude. Because, you know, when you get new people who are, you know, security,
you know
and
you.
They, hey, here, show your ID. Like, I always come here. So I'm walking, and then Chuck was walking hella slow. And I'm like, and you know, I walk
you
fast. And I'm like, I don't want to run this man over, but he's walking really slow. I said, I know it's Chuck. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know what? Maybe it's not Chuck. I'll just go around. And then finally I get up here and there's Chuck. Like, yeah, it's Chuck.
That's hilarious. So welcome to the show.
Yes.
Chuck Rose, everybody. Mm-hmm. Writer, producer, author. You direct?
I do
I think
direct.
We talked about
I
that.
Haven't done an episode of the show yet, but okay. Hopefully, mm-hmm. you know, coming up maybe in season 3 or with okay. the new ABC show.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Not ruling it out. But
he's hinting around a new ABC
yeah.
show. I
not
see
ruling
you.
It out.
Because for those of you who are listening, yeah, last year we had Chuck came in and he was talking about our the fabulous, if you haven't watched it yet, you need to watch it, The yes. Art of War with Dennis Quaid.
On Crackle.
Vintage sexy. Mm-hmm. Get your vintage sexy on Crackle.
It's sexy. It really
it is. It is.
Even sexier now.
Yes. Because we saw the trailer for season 2 and it's like, y'all done turned up.
Okay, they gave him an extra $5.
Okay, it's like, y'all gave you some extra change.
Exactly.
Do what you gonna do. So That's always exciting, especially when you get a new season of a show. But what I want to hear about mm-hmm. is this new thing you got going on. Because when Chuck was telling me about it when we came in here, I was so excited. And I have to tell you the story yet again because it's so
it.
Funny because
tell
he didn't realize mm-hmm. he was in the room with three gods of acting and was like, oh, I didn't know that was that person. I'm like, you were in the room. I would have been in the corner.
You didn't see the halo
look,
over the
you
head?
Didn't see the halos over the... I would have been in the corner shaking and crying and rolling back and forth going, Lord, what did I do?
Just
Lord, humming. What did I deserve to be in this room? But we're going to have Chuck tell us. So tell us the exciting things that you got going on.
I think it's better than I didn't know. I was more chill and I enjoyed my lunch. But it actually started this project I'm doing at ABC called Head Games. It started before The Art of War. Started about 5 years ago. We went out with this pitch mm-hmm. about a psychiatrist who's really a spy for the government.
Based mm-hmm. on a book.
It's
right?
based on your book.
Well, before it was a book, we took it out as a pitch.
Oh look at you.
We didn't sell it as a pitch.
And
I
you're
said,
like,
you know,
I'm
I really love
it.
This character. Mm-hmm. I love this story. The idea that you would use a psychiatrist to get at this sort of very dangerous kind of Dick Cheney kind mm-hmm. of guy, that your most vulnerable way to get somebody is through their mind.
Mm-hmm. I love that.
And so... I thought it's a very unlikely kind of hero. It's an unusual, you know, way of telling a thriller. And so I wrote it as a book, mm-hmm. and we called it Head Games, a neurotic thriller, because my publisher said, you know, you got to have an unusual tagline. And I thought, well, neurotic thriller will make people, because, mm-hmm. you know, you're browsing on Amazon, you know, you look at each thumbnail for about 3 seconds.
Right, right.
And if there's anything
true.
About the cover of your book that makes... you look at it for 4 seconds mm-hmm. instead of 3 seconds, mm-hmm. it increases your chances of somebody clicking on it and
right.
buying it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So the book did well, and then with the success of The Art of More, so, you know, I had an opportunity. I sold a pilot last year to NBC, which didn't get made, but it got, you know, sort of got me on more people's radar.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you kind of build a house a brick at a time.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And say, oh,
so
I was disappointed.
Once you get into the system.
Right.
Once you get into the system, and then, okay, I did a show on Crackle, mm-hmm. and the show's doing well. It got picked up for season 2.
Yes.
Now I've written a show for Network. Mm-hmm. And so I went out this year with, you know, just, you know, a little bit more credibility, a mm-hmm. little more momentum.
Mm-hmm.
And people that I had met last year said, oh, what have you got this year? And my agents, who are very, you know, dedicated and very tenacious, they said, well, what would you want to do if you could do anything now?
Hmm.
And I said, I would really want to go back and do Head Games as a TV show.
Okay.
Because it is a thriller. You know, the nice thing about the book.
You already developed it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I spent, you know, 2-3 years really getting inside the story, mm-hmm. the heads of the characters, and the book would be the roadmap for season 1 of the show.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I did all that sort of interior monologue that you can do in a book.
Okay.
And now I wanted to be able to do all the visuals and let the audience kind of discover the interior mm-hmm. and not... The great thing about the book is you can really share that with them in a show that they've got to do a little bit of the work. You're like, all right, what's he really thinking when he's saying? Because everybody's lying all
right.
the time.
Right.
And in a book, you can kind of lay that out a little clearer. But, you know, so my agent sent the book out, and it went to Juvie Productions, which is Viola Davis's production company.
Mm-hmm.
And I met with Andrew Wang, who's her head of TV development.
Mm-hmm.
And then he loved it, and he brought
see,
it.
See, you're just throwing out these names.
I know.
Like, just, that's my cousin.
And that's
stuff.
My cousin.
Well, the nice thing about Juvie is it really feels like family.
Mm-hmm.
And they really treat everybody like family. I've never worked at a place that has so much just sort of integrity. And, you know, as Viola said, there's not many people in this business that really have your back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are people who think you have talent, and they're willing to... you know, exploit that talent, but who really have your back. But she and her husband, Julius, have just set this wonderful tone where they really genuinely look out for the people who work with them and work for them.
Mm-hmm.
And they brought Andrew on. He used to work at Bravo, and now he runs development for them for the TV side.
Okay.
And they signed a deal with ABC, I think in April. So you know, their deal with ABC is fairly new.
Mm-hmm. This is their first project, right?
And this was their first one-hour drama. Okay. They had brought a couple of other things into ABC that I guess just weren't, you know, weren't a fit. And then they had sold a comedy, but they hadn't sold a one-hour drama yet. Mm-hmm. And they, you know, they really believed in the book, and we went in and we pitched it to ABC and they bought it.
Wow.
So, you know, I've been working on that now, writing it for them. Okay. And then the other day, you know, Viola's getting her star on the Walk of Fame. And again, just a real show of generosity, making me feel like part of the family. They said, oh, you know, come to the ceremony, come to the luncheon. And I didn't even know that there was a ceremony or a luncheon. I thought, oh, she's getting her star on Walk of Fame. I'll just be one of those guys wandering by on Hollywood Boulevard. Yeah. And I'll just be like, hey. And I was saying to Andrew, I said, well, is it dressy? Do I wear a suit? He goes, well, you know, Viola will be dressed up. Meryl will be dressed up. And I thought Meryl was like the head of the Hollywood Chamber of Commerce or something. He said, oh, wait, Meryl, wait, who? He goes, oh, you know, Meryl Streep is presenting her with the star.
That's hilarious.
I was like, no, I did not know. So I was like, all right, well, I'm just going to fade into the background now. And, but no, it was a wonderful event. And again, you could just feel how much people love her and respect her and admire her. And the people from Fences were there, and the people from How to Get Away with Murder were there. And, you know, it's a busy time. I mean, it's Golden Globes and award season, and everybody's all over the place. But everybody came. I mean, I know Meryl Streep had other things that she had to do as well. And she went to the farewell White House dinner for Obama Friday night. So, you know, they're all busy people. But you could see that being there for Viola was really important to everybody.
Yes.
And she just kind of inspires that in you. Mm-hmm. I mean, the first time I met her, I was like, I just don't want to let you down. I want to give you a script that you can really be proud of, that you can be proud to have your name on. And that has really made me try to raise the bar even more. You know, I always try to do the best that I possibly can and create something that's worth everybody's effort, because having done a show now, you see how many people are on a show.
Yes.
And you're up there on set and you see there's 200 people and they're all working their asses off. And you're like, well, I sure hope that my work is...
It's got your name on it.
Yeah, right. I got my name on it, but also that it's worth the dedication and the time that everybody puts into it, that everybody, you know, I hope is proud of it. Mm-hmm. And I think on The Art of More they are, and I know our cast and everybody, you know, was so happy to come back for season two, and the audiences have been embracing it. And but then, you know, meeting Viola and seeing, you know, I mean, nobody sets the bar higher than that, and that I could do something that hopefully she will feel is worth having her name on.
Sure.
And her husband, Julius, as well, is such a wonderful man. They just have so much integrity. Mm-hmm. You pick up on it the minute you meet them. So I really feel blessed that I'm working with such terrific people. And yeah, the luncheon was...
Okay, can we just say something. That luncheon, he showed us a photo.
Yeah, he's like, here's Denzel. He goes, wait, he's sitting there. He's like, oh, there's Denzel. So he's like, video, you know, and actually moving pictures, and Denzel's making the toast. He's like, oh, and there's Bryce Dallas Howard. Mm-hmm. And I look at the picture in the back. I go, oh, there's Angela Bassett. And he's like, who, what? Is that not, that's not, he goes, that's not Angela Bassett.
I didn't say who, because I know I'm white, but I do know who Angela Bassett is.
I'm just messing with you.
But
he said, it's not. He goes, where? I said, what? Because, like, you know, it's the picture, but it's like in the background. She's in the back. I said, blow it up, like move it up and make it bigger. So he makes it bigger, and there's Queen Angela looking all fabulous in the background. I'm like,
she was sitting very quietly in the background, and when Denzel Washington is getting up and making a speech, that's sort of who you're looking at.
Right.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. So she's like right directly.
But you know what? I think what you said in terms of them, you know, them having their integrity and them being friends for years, and I think they have a certain comfort level where it's not like the celebrity fancy thing where it's like, Angela can come, you know, celebrate her girl Viola doing this thing and not make it about them. Like, oh, I'm Angela Bassett. I'm here. Because, you know, if you notice in the picture, she's sitting at the table, you know, to the side, just chilling.
Yeah. She's and I'm like, this your moment.
Those are the those are the kind of people you want to surround yourself with who are there to celebrate you and your success because it'll raise everybody up. And you're just sitting in there relaxing and got everybody in the room with you. How exciting for you.
I don't know how relaxed I was, but
here's a good thing about your project.
It was her day, so I could just enjoy it and be a fly on the wall. It wasn't like, you know, when we did the premiere in New York for The Art of More, and that was a big event, and a lot of media came.
Right.
And then the focus was more on the work that I had done and the show, as well as the cast. But this was her day, so I was just honored to be a fly on the wall there.
Right.
And they announced you, which was really nice, you know?
Yeah, you know, they were very gracious, and they introduced me around to some of the people there. But again, you know, it was really about her and the work she's done and the movie, or the whole cast of Fences was there, and they're all such wonderful people. This is their moment in the sun, and I couldn't be happier for them.
Well, what I'm excited about with this new project with Vile is that, because a couple of shows that have been out right now, like, have ended, like, the really good, like, psychological thriller, like, what I call grown-up smart TV, and a lot of shows have ended. Like, I'm thinking in terms of, like, the stuff that has, like, you know, where it messes your mind up, you don't know who to trust and stuff. I'm thinking about in terms of, like, a couple of, the one with Mads Mikkelsen that everyone loves. You know the TV show? He was playing the doctor. Come on, Lecter. Is it Lecter?
Hannibal. Oh, Hannibal?
Hannibal, thank Hannibal. You. Hannibal. Mm-hmm. And, you know, those kind of like, where you're kind of like watching smart.
I'll take TV trivia for 200.
But it's like a couple other shows like that. A lot of them, you know, they're ending, and we're looking for new stuff. And a lot of the new TV shows that are coming out, like, honestly, some of them are just not that interesting to me. But this, when you're talking about a neurotic thriller where mind games and political intrigue, and who do, and you know that's my fear in movies. It's like, who do you trust, and who's unreliable? And I love unreliable narrator story, and I love those kind of head games. Like, this is the kind of smart TV that we need.
It definitely lives in a world of paranoia. You know, our lead character is this, you know, very successful psychiatrist. He's got a good practice on Park Avenue. He's got a wife and kids and a home in Scarsdale. And, you know, he came from a blue-collar background, but he's worked himself up to a very accomplished elite world. And I think he looks around and sees the world as a relatively safe place. And then he finds that, oh, you know, this patient that you've been seeing, he's actually a mass murderer. And he's staging these political coups all over the world. And it starts, gets him thinking, like, well, now is the guy on the subway sitting across from me. Well, what's in that briefcase? Why is he carrying, is there a bomb? So he begins to see the world differently. And the paranoia that he begins to experience, because he is an everyman. You know, he's a relatively successful everyman, but he still, he comes from a normal background, and suddenly he's thrust into this world almost the way Hitchcock used to do. Of like a Jimmy Stewart. Somebody that everybody could relate to, and then suddenly he's traveling around the world trying to stop this guy who's going to blow up, you know, the Royal Albert Hall or something. So we definitely live in a world of paranoia right now. I mean, clearly, and there are people who are capitalizing on that paranoia. And we're just trying to show, here's a smart man, he's like any of us, and he gets pulled into it. And it's about, A, how he gets pulled into it, but also about how he keeps himself from getting consumed by it. How he manages to rise above it and use his own mind to rise above his paranoia. But he definitely goes on a dangerous, tricky ride before he's able to get to that.
It sounds like you're going to trick us, though. See, because what I keep thinking is he really paranoid?
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Well,
clearly he's not really paranoid. Shit's really going down.
Shit is really going down, and just because you're paranoid
doesn't mean they're really
you're not right.
But
they really are out to get you.
It's a good red herring there, right?
Yes. I miss those kind of shows. Like literally, since I've been off on vacation, I've been going back and checking out a lot, like the Parallax View, a lot of the classic 70s intrigues. I miss those type of shows and movies, and I just wish that we would bring more of those back. So it sounds like you're bringing something that is going to have me with my tea, with my Twitter peeps going, girl.
I just want everybody to have their tea and their Twitter peeps. Yeah, look. Watching the show.
Now, if you could fan cast it, who would you have to play your psychiatrist?
Can you say that on there?
Can you say? Have you guys started? Or just if you could fan cast, like. How far have you got to the cast? Have you got cast yet?
No,
we're not
on the script right now. You know, there's some really interesting people that we're talking about right now, and obviously Viola and her relationships, and I'd rather not mention anybody.
Okay, cool. Is she going to pop in? Is she going to be on the show? Are you guys discussing that still? Or?
I would like her to make a cameo as the president.
That would be awesome.
I want her to play the president.
That would be awesome.
But she's got her plate is pretty full, so I don't know.
She ain't doing nothing. She ain't doing nothing.
That's my one dream casting is I want her to play the president, because I want her to sort of show us the way forward and show us what's possible in the future.
Interesting.
Well, you know everyone's going to be. I mean, it's Viola Davis. They're going to have some sexy people, really smart actors. And I'm just excited. And like you said, if you could just have her do just Queen Viola, if you could just do,
you know,
if you could just do one, like all she got to do is walk by and just look fabulous. Like my dream thing is just to see movies and pictures of her. I mean, I just love her. Like I've been a fan for like a year. I was telling Chuck earlier, like I've been a fan since way back. Like the first time I saw her was in, no one saw the movie because it didn't make nothing. But if you saw the original Russian one, Solaris, which I love, and everyone tends to hate because they don't like slow foreign movies. But she was in the remake with George Clooney. And I think that was one of the first times I saw her in terms of in film. And I just thought, who is this woman? I love her. You know, and then, you know, in the course of her career started building, like, oh, so this is Viola Davis. Mm-hmm. This is the one George Clooney said, like, if you want to talk about an actor, this the one right here. And I was like, I'm going to have to follow her and be a fan. Like, she's on one of my favorite episodes of Law & Order. I think it's Law & Order SVU, where she plays, like, this bad cop who's, like, killing everybody. And I was like, y'all need to look at Viola and get her into some stuff, because she can play.
Lisa always claims she's ahead of the game anyway. She's
and look, I know. Like, I'm telling people. I've been trying to tell you.
What stock should I buy?
I'm trying to tell you. Anything Viola is in.
Okay.
You know, and like, literally, when we went to go see her in Fences on Christmas Day, and like, every performance she does, she brings something. And in any production that she's involved with, it's going to be banging. You know, it's going to be something, because she's a smart woman.
She is.
And she does not choose crappy projects. Like, she's one of those thinking actors who, I don't know, there are actors, there are celebrities, there are entertainers, but there are certain groupings of actors where it doesn't matter what they do, I'm going to go see it.
They're kind of their own genre.
Yes.
They bring an integrity to it, and certainly Denzel Washington is that way. I remember reading something one time about how Jeff Bridges is his own genre. And certain actors, just if they, you know, if they're in it. And,
yes.
And she's definitely one of those people that I'll watch her do anything.
Yeah. You know, even if it's a small role or a walk-in, like, oh, Viola's in it? Oh, we coming. We coming to come see it.
Well, I think that's how she got where she is that she started off playing, you know, small roles, but it didn't matter. Whatever she did, that's where
she stole it. She'd steal every scene.
Every time.
Like I said, Solaris, you know, like the first movie I saw her in, it was an ensemble cast. I mean, George Clooney was a star, but when it came to her part, like, I was riveted. And when I see actors like that, like, there's others that are like that. Like, no matter what they do, I am riveted to them. And if you're a writer and you get a project with an actor like that that can bring something to that, I mean, that's
well,
a blessing.
Speaking of that, go ahead.
No, as you said, I've been very fortunate. I've gotten terrific actors on the projects I've worked on. I mean, Arda Moore,
Dennis Quaid, Vintage Bay, yes.
Kate Bosworth, Carrie Ellis.
Stay leaning me. Yeah. Oh, my God.
I mean, they're all, you know, Kate, Carrie, Dennis, they're all wonderful. And, you know, I was talking with Carrie about it, and the thing that attracted him, and I think the others too, is that it is a show that's set in a world that you don't usually see.
Yes.
And, you know, the auction world, like, who does a show in the auction world? Who does a show about a psychiatrist who's a spy? So it's not like I'm trying to be a troublemaker.
Right.
But these are the stories that I'm drawn to.
Right.
And for a long time, it made life more difficult.
Because a lot of people didn't want to get those projects. Mm-hmm.
And even when we first finished the pilot for Art of More, and they tested it, you know, like a focus group, and they had them fill out these questions, and they did this marketing thing, like, what show is it most like? And usually there's some show that you get like 70, 80% comparison. I think the highest ranked was like Blacklist. It was like 40% of the people said it was like Blacklist, which, you know, even that's kind of pushing it. So there was really no show that they could compare it to.
Right.
Yeah, I wouldn't compare it to Blacklist.
Right.
They said, in a way, that's great. Like, the marketing people from Sony, when we had our big, like, you know, season two marketing thing, and they kind of went over the season one results again, and they said, in a way, that's great that people said, well, there's really no show we can compare it to.
Right.
He goes, but it's also for us as the marketing department a challenge. Because if people don't know what they can compare it to, that's how we, you know, make decisions on what to do. It's funny, because when I was working on Art of More, I really immersed myself in the art world and articles about the art world. Now that I'm doing Head Games, I'm really immersing myself in a lot of books about psychiatry and psychology and how the human mind works. And there are some great authors that have written about how we make decisions. And the way we make decisions is we have an ideal in our mind. And the thing that we're looking at, we compare it to that ideal and we say, well, how close does it come to that ideal? And sometimes that leads us to make bad decisions. But it's very applicable to so many things. You know, why do you buy this car? Why do you buy this house? Why do you date this person versus this other person? You're comparing them to some ideal that may or may not even exist.
Your conditioning has been conditioned.
Yeah, there is that. There is that. Let me ask you a question. It just reminded me of, because I always talk about how being a writer and having been a former actor like you were, I'm always studying human behavior.
Right.
Like, I can tell people a mile away, like, who they are and how come they're not dating this person and why they're dating that same type of person. What, I just see things like a mile away. Do you find in your research that you're seeing patterns in things or what?
Yes. I mean, definitely in terms of becoming more aware of why people perceive things the way mm-hmm. they do, and how those perceptions may or may not be true, okay. especially in the wake, on a more macro level, in the last year, the public made some pretty shocking, horrifying decisions in this country and in other countries.
Oh, they did not.
You think?
Why did they do that? So it has applications to everything, and then I look at the characters in my shows, and why do they make these terrible decisions? Mm-hmm. And, you know, the art world and the auction world, I was drawn to it because I was drawn to the idea of why do people collect things? Mm-hmm. Why is it we think owning certain things will change who we are? Mm-hmm. And now with Head Games, it's sort of the reverse of that. It's like, what's going on inside our mind mm-hmm. and how does that affect our external behavior?
Okay.
So it's sort of the reverse approach, but it's equally fascinating. This person is doing these things, and the interesting thing about our lead character is that he's good at getting inside your head and finding those buttons that you know, why are you doing the things you're doing mm-hmm. and how can I push those buttons to make you do something else?
Trigger them. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So he's working very internally. The people in The Art of More, at least initially, were working very externally. They were trying, you know, Graham, the lead character, is this, you know, he grew up in Brooklyn. He was mm-hmm. an Iraq war vet. He gets into the auction world. He tries to remake himself.
Right.
But he tries to remake himself on the outside. Mm-hmm. Season two now, we get deeper into character and some of the things that we had hinted at in season one. You know, Cary Elwes's character really isn't that wealthy anymore. He's got like a lot of old money families. Mm. All he sort of has is the name.
Yeah.
Mm. And he uses that name as currency to
I
try
love
and
that
trade
kind of
on
stuff.
It. So we're getting deeper into the inside of the characters in season two as well. And, you know, that's the luxury of having a season two. Mm-hmm. Is season one, we really kept things moving because we were trying to introduce a world and characters that people had never seen before.
Hook your audience in, like, yes.
Hook them in, lots of danger. And then in season two, there's still lots of danger. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the sins that people have done in the past catch up with them. But there's also more introspection and there's more times where people let their guard down.
Give me
and
a sure question.
What's behind the cover?
Now, I can't remember off the top of my head. Had you been staffed? You'd never been staffed on a show.
I had not.
Now, this is an interesting thing. You've never been staffed on a show. You sell a show, come in as EP. You have another EP, right? Another
yes.
showrunner EP?
Yes, yes.
Okay. What have you learned from season one and
yes,
season two?
Yes, because last time you came here.
That's a big
jump. Because the last time you came, you talked to us. The show was about to come out, and you were just talking about, oh, just put it all together. Now that it's happened, it's sure. out, it's a success, new season, what is something that you've learned that you wish you probably had to know when you came in?
Yeah, that's a good one to look at.
Well, season one, we were all under a lot of pressure because mm-hmm. we were all doing it for the first time. It was Crackle's first, you know, big
that's
budget
right.
horror
yes.
show, so everybody was new to it. And even our actors, they're veteran actors, mm-hmm. but they were feature actors.
That's true. They had so,
yes,
on the show,
yes.
You know, this was their first time doing a TV series. Mm-hmm. So I think we all sort of had those kind of freshman jitters. Mm-hmm. Season two, you know, we had the benefit of, all right, what worked and what didn't work from mm-hmm. season one. Who were the people that we really liked from season one? Who were the characters that we really liked? Mm-hmm. What do we want to do more of? You know, we definitely wanted to balance it out more between all four of our lead characters. Season mm-hmm. one was definitely heavily weighted towards, you know, Christian Cook's character, Graham right. Connor. And the other characters were sort of there as obstacles for him. Towards the end of the season, we got deeper into Dennis's character. We got mm-hmm. deeper into Kate's character and Carrie's character. And then we said, yeah, it's great when we can get deeper into those characters as well. So we definitely wanted to balance it out more in season two mm-hmm. and see where the bad choices they made in season one led them to. I think it was also in learning how to work collaboratively. Mm-hmm. You know, I came from being a feature writer and being a playwright, where you're just sort of alone in a room.
Yes.
And then you give it to the actors. And then when you give it to the actors, obviously there are discussions and collaborations with the director. But television is much more collaborative mm-hmm. than even the most collaborative parts of doing a feature or a play. Sure. And so the idea of the writer's room, we had more writers this year. Mm-hmm. There was more interaction. We had more time.
Mm.
You definitely wanted as much time. We had eight production days per episode instead of seven.
Oh, really?
So we weren't shooting until 4 or 5 in the morning.
Yeah.
People don't realize one day makes a huge difference.
Oh, my God. Yeah, because we're all locations. We don't have sound stages, so we're always moving around.
Which is why the show always looks so expensive to me. You guys really utilize what's going on in the streets and the cars and the clothes and all that stuff.
Well, we have a brilliant, brilliant production team up in Montreal, and we work with a company up there called Muse Entertainment, and they're one of the biggest production companies in Montreal, and I really have to credit them with, you know, stretching the dollar as far as they can. You know, I always wanted the show to be something that helped bring new artists to the forefront, and this season we dealt more with modern art, and Dennis's character is opening a modern art museum, and we featured, you know, real art, and then I wanted to feature some of the artists that I love, and we had a scene where Carrie's character, who's sort of getting into kind of illegal dealings of his own now, and he sells this Rouchet, and I picked Rouchet because I've always loved Rouchet, but we actually had to get his permission to use his painting, his famous painting, Burning Gas Station, and so the show contacted his, you know, his agent or his, you know, his art agent, and they asked him, and he said, sure.
Nice.
So he's still alive, and he allowed us to use the painting. And to me, that was like that was a celebrity sighting. You know? Oh, we've got a real Rouchet in the show. I mean, obviously, old paintings. You know,
then you
got
to get it shipped.
Okay,
you
call it.
Let them handle it. Our department.
But that's an exciting part because, like, you know, things that are over 100 years that are in public domain, you can use Degas, you can show those paintings, which I also love. But to be able to have something contemporary in the show, I'd like to be able to do more of that. Mozart in the Jungle has done a great job of that with the music world, and they have real conductors and real musicians in the show doing cameos. I'd love if we could do more of that going forward, but to get deeper into the art world too. So the collaborative nature of it, I think, keeps getting tighter as we go along, which I'm really happy about.
Speaking of the art world, have you had any backlash from any of the big exhibitors or whatever who are like, how dare you guys go into our world, or, you know, you guys aren't accurate, whatever the hell, you know how they are. There's always somebody who got some shit to say.
Nobody has sued us.
That was a good way to dodge
it's
it,
like, we
it?
Have not received any papers.
That's all I know. Nobody has sued us. Whether they are happy or unhappy, I do not know.
Okay.
There is one big auction house that I have worked with, and they have been advisors to us.
Okay, good.
And I run scripts and ideas by them, and they've been very helpful. I don't want to say their name because I don't want to get anybody in trouble.
Yeah, sure.
But they have been very helpful. And they have watched
Smith and Brothers.
The show.
We know who y'all are.
But they are, a lot of them are very secretive, and they wouldn't let us tour their offices, and they wouldn't let us come in there because they're selling an image. You know, you go in there and you spend $20 million for a painting. Why is that painting worth $20 million? Well, it's because they're doing a good job of creating that
buzz or whatever.
Yeah.
Right?
And I think that they're very reluctant to have people look behind the curtain.
Oh, okay.
That's so funny because when you're watching The Art of War, that what cracks me up is, like, when you go to, like, the big museums and things, like, I've been in the ones in Italy and I've been in the ones in New York, and it's like, I'm that person who looks at the art and I'm like, that is, like, trash. And it's like, and someone actually paid $15 million? Like, y'all getting punked for real. But it's like you said, that psychological
thing. They will not
thing.
Want you in their auction house.
No, no. I'm like, can you imagine me? It's like, y'all really want to bid on this? Like, y'all want this in your house? Like, and it's funny because it's like when you said you were doing all your research and stuff, the psychological, like, why do people put value on things, you know, that for the most part, most of them think this looks like shit. Like, really, it's just, like, I have to admit, the first time I saw water lilies, like, in New York, like, the big, walked in. Because, you know, you get the hype, and you're just like, ah, da, da, and you see it, and you're like,
it's all right.
But, I'm terrible, because that's like when I went to the Vatican with my family, and we're looking around. It's like, okay, let me go in here. Every year I come visit family in Italy, let's go to the Vatican and look. And I finally saw, I'm like, that is some of the shittiest art. Up, like, this shit don't look like what Tom Hanks was looking at in that movie. Like, this stuff doesn't even look good. This is too much gold. Like, who did Trump? Did this white come in here organize? This is too much. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting in
looking
terms
like
of
the Hearst Castle. Is
yeah. It's like, it's too much. Y'all need somebody to come and say it's too much. But I think that's what I love about The Art of War. It's like, like you said, they probably don't want people, you know, going to the Land of Oz and looking behind the curtain and seeing, like, this is what it is. Because I'm always curious about people who buy the art and then they hide it. They don't display it. They keep it hidden, you know, and these fakes that go around. And it's like, it's just so much intrigue. It's just so sexy, well, you know?
Yeah, I don't understand people that buy it and then hide it. You know, if you look over the, like, the biggest ticket prices, the highest selling paintings, like the top 20 highest selling paintings of all time, like 10 of the 20 were bought and never seen again.
What?
Several of them were bought by Russian oligarchs and they're hanging in some mansion somewhere in Russia, or a lot of them were from Georgia. Not our Georgia, their Georgia.
But Russia, yeah.
And never seen again. So, I mean, clearly they must show it to whoever they're entertaining there, but they live behind these big stone walls, and then those paintings are lost to us because they're never seen.
Yeah.
So I think what goes on behind those stone walls is really interesting, and that's something that we want to delve even deeper into.
I hope you do. So. I love that. Yeah. That kind of intrigue and sexy and like you said, the psychological, like, why? Like, what's behind this painting? Because, like, literally, and it could just be me. You know, I'm walking some places and people are like, oh, it's the best architecture. It's the best this. And I'm walking like, I wouldn't have this shit in my house. I don't know what y'all doing. You know, but I'd be like, okay, someone likes that. It's like, just because it's not your taste, Lisa, somebody else likes it. But let's be honest. Some of the stuff you see is like, and it's worth this much. And you're looking at it like.
Yeah, sometimes.
Like, there's some Van Gogh. There's like a tiny chicken scratching on the wall. And I was looking at it and it was like. Y'all paid how much for that? Like, what? You know, but it was because of the name of the artist.
Because somebody
and
did
someone
it.
Did it exactly. And they had it. And I was just like,
Well, with modern art too, a lot of it is even harder to understand. Like, I actually love looking at the water lilies and they got and those things give me a chill and really transport me. So I'm an art nerd. But some of the modern art doesn't speak to me the way a lot of the Impressionist art does. But for other people, it does. Mm-hmm. Or they think, oh, I'm going to buy it for $1 million today and sell it for $20 million in a year. Whereas a Van Gogh is already $100 million. How much more is it going to go up? True. That's why the hot area, especially at the big auction houses, is modern art. Because that's the stuff that can appreciate more. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times people buy it as an investment.
At least they hope it appreciates.
Well, it's more of a risk. It definitely is more of a risk.
Yeah.
But you know, when the stock market was losing money, well, where were rich people going to put their money? So the art market really exploded after the financial meltdown for those people that could still afford to buy art. And also some people use it to launder dirty money.
Right.
That's why I think a lot of these Russian oligarchs buy it, because it's a great way to launder $20 million at one time.
It reminds me of one of my favorite episodes of Absolutely Fabulous, where Idina Menzel is going around.
You see that in the movie they did?
Girl, Look, people hated it.
I haven't seen it.
I loved
it. The commercial was off the chain.
People hated it, but I loved it. But this is what I tell people. With that movie, you have to have been a fan of the TV series. Mm-hmm. If you weren't a fan of the shows,
you won't get it.
You're not. It's not going to work for you. Mm-hmm. It's not. I don't think it's one of those standalone shows that anybody movies can go see. I think you really have to have been a fan. Mm-hmm. But there was an episode where she goes in and she's just buying the modern art stuff. And she's like, oh, well, don't you want to know about that? This is the stuff, like, she wasn't looking. It was trash art. But she's like, is this going to value? Like, it's going to appreciate it? Okay, get all of it, you know? And then she had it in her house and her friends were like, they were like, so is this, but is it art? Like, it was trash. But she says, yes, but it'll be worth something in the future. And I just... It's just fascinating me. And just like with the new show you're doing in terms of, you know, from writing the new pilot script and working on this new show with Viola's production company, in terms of your writing, I mean, what have you learned in terms of doing all that research, the whole psychological stuff? Like, did you find yourself, like, analyzing yourself?
That's interesting.
And, like, you know, like, you know, because when you're doing research for stuff, you know, you really start to think
about...
It has
to come from a place.
How does it apply, you know, like, did you find something, like, different or amazing that you didn't know about yourself, you know, how your mind works, especially being a writer?
Well, anytime you're reading anything or doing any kind of research, there are going to be things that resonate with you. And you say, oh, shit, that's really, I do that, or that comes, now I understand why I do that. And then you try to find a way to put it into what your characters do without it being your own therapy, because whatever they do has to be interesting for an audience.
Right.
So you're always balancing between, well, you know, if that speaks to me, I bet other people have experienced that too. So hopefully without being indulgent, you're saying, well, at least I know I'm giving them something truthful.
Right.
This speaks to me, and that's not the only barometer I use, but I definitely start with that. And then that's where the collaboration part comes in. You show it to the, you know, your producers, and if it speaks to them in a similar way, you're like, all right, well, then I've touched on something. Mm-hmm. You know, in Head Games, in the book, the advantage of the book is that, you know, we were able to take it out there to an audience, and there were readers, and people post reviews on Amazon, and a lot of people spoke to the fact that the relationship that the lead character has with his father, mm-hmm. they have a very strained relationship, and when you have a strained relationship with your own father, you know, for some people anyway, it leads them to become more introspective and helps explain why he became a therapist himself. Mm-hmm. But they're very different, even though they're both therapists. But mm-hmm. his father is sort of very blue-collar, and he's more intellectual. And as a result, he's always kind of considered Jonah something of a pussy. Mm. And so when he becomes a spy, suddenly for the first time in his life, he's proud of his son.
Wow.
And so his father, who he's never had a close relationship, suddenly becomes the one person he can talk to more than he can, because he can't tell his wife what he's doing, he can't tell his friends what he's doing, but he can talk to his father about it. And so that relationship really resonated with readers of the book, and it's something
so that becomes the ally and the mentor, so to speak.
It does. They sort of learn from each other. They start to uncover things that they had never known about each other, and the work draws them together. And I thought, well, that's something that clearly spoke to people in the book. I guess everybody's got baggage with their parents of one kind or another. And it's definitely resonated with the people at the studio and the network too. They've all, you know, all the people who have read it have pointed to the father-son relationship as something that they think is something that really grabs them in the show. So, you know, you find things that strike a nerve with you, and you hope they'll strike a nerve with other people. And if they don't, then that's why they have a second draft. And if it makes it through the second and third drafts, then you've got something.
How much rewriting did you have to do? Like, once, I know you said Viola's read the script, the production company, like, how extensive
was
the...
adapting a book, too.
Yeah.
Like, I'm adapting a book. It's a network show. So, you know, obviously, there's going to be a lot of voices there. You've got the producers, you've got the studio, you've got the network. But it's been an incredibly supportive process. I mean, everybody went into it seeing the same show. We all kind of agreed on where we started and what the tone of it was going to be and what the journey was going to be. And so... I mean, there's certainly been notes and there's been rewrites and there's been revisions, but that's never changed. And that's pretty rare in the world
that
of
is.
Network.
Yeah.
And even all the people at the studio and the network and the producers have pointed to the fact that, wow, it's really great when that happens, when everybody agrees on the show that we're making. So I'm really grateful that I'm working with really, really smart people at the network and at the studio and my producers, and they're all really behind the kind of show that they see it as.
I like that because it helps you kind of avoid development hell when you get in there and you're like, hey, I thought we had this vision.
People come here to talk about development hell.
We had this vision, and then the vision gets changed up so much that you start to lose, you know. And do you find it's helpful to the fact that it's the adaptation is your book that you wrote, that you have a clear understanding and you're the expert in the room because I wrote the book?
You know, no one ever thinks that they're not the expert in the room, so you never want to play that card. But when I do get notes or questions about the characters, I have a pretty deep well of research and thought that's gone into it. It's not just like an idea I pitched this summer that I've been thinking about for a month. You know, I do always go back to the book when I'm trying to find an answer or a solution to a note and say, well, why is he this way with his wife? Or why is he this way with his daughter? And then I go back to the work that I did when I was writing the book and all the, you know, sort of background and detail that I created for the characters that may or may not have made it into the book or the script, but I know it because I did the work before I wrote it, and that's been really helpful. You know, I've never said, oh, well, it's this way in the book, so it has to be this way, because that don't fly at the network, and nor should it, you know. They're making a TV show, and so I learned early on that whatever note comes your way, you really have to try and get in the shoes of the person who gave you the note, and that's certainly something that I learned doing The Art of More. And I think that's why, you know, season two, I understood that better than I did season one. And now I'm benefiting from that experience working with ABC, where you have to work very quickly because the network development cycle is very short.
And I was just talking to somebody this weekend. Will came and we were sitting talking yesterday while I was writing. And I was telling him about how, you know, the project I'm working on, they've already hired me to do the next job. And how... sometimes it seems like a lot of years go by before you finally feel like you start getting whatever it is you're supposed to get.
A lot of years.
A lot of years. And you're still, you know, trying to get to wherever it is you're trying to get to, but they come. I don't want to say they come when you're ready, because it's not true, because a lot of people get it and they don't succeed. Mm-hmm. So I don't believe they were ready for it. But I believe, I'm just listening to your story, reminds me of mine in some sort of ways, where, you know, you were making these short films and doing these plays and doing all these other things and moved from being an actor to writing books. And now you're, you know, EP on a TV show.
Right.
And now you're selling shows. And
right.
Blah, 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 you know, et cetera, et cetera. They just kind of keep
you've accelerated,
going
my friend.
Forward. Like,
yes.
The leap is huge to the outside.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But to you, you know,
it's
you've
like been
knocking on that
yes.
door, making all those steps all the way.
Yeah.
Definitely the things that I did for the years leading up to this have helped inform. I mean, certainly doing theater, mm-hmm. doing plays gives you the chance to work with actors, mm-hmm. to work with people that question, mm-hmm. you know, why is my character doing this? And you need to really understand that to be able to communicate that to them. Seeing your work live in front of an audience every night. I mean, all those things definitely helped, you know, educate me. It was still a huge education once I got the show, but sure. I was certainly more ready for it than I would have been had I not done those things. Mm-hmm. I don't think I could have done Art of More, and I don't think that I would have the relationships that I have with the cast or mm-hmm. been able to write characters that even attracted that cast mm-hmm. if I hadn't done the work that I had done in the mm-hmm. theater. Mm-hmm. The feature work, you know, a lot of it was development stuff. So you sure. learn how to take notes, you learn how to work with people, and you get to meet people. But until you see your work produced, to me, that's the big leap.
Correct.
And at least in the theater, I got to see my work produced, doing mm-hmm. some of the short films mm-hmm. and the indies that I mm-hmm. did. Again, I got to see my work produced. We toured a lot of film festivals, so I got to see it in front of an audience. Mm-hmm. And that certainly helped. But nothing, I mean, doing Art of More was the great leap forward, mm-hmm. even though all that other work helped to inform mm-hmm. it.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
definitely.
So what's next for you? Since you are now the writing shows yeah, coming out of here.
Are you guys shooting season two now? Is it already?
No, season two launched in November. So okay. we wrapped in the fall. People can get it now on Crackle.
Mm-hmm. Got it, mm-hmm. got it, got it.
So any smart TV or Roku or Crackle.com. So you can see both seasons now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're kind of brainstorming what season three is going to be. We're waiting to hear, you know, if and when that's going to happen. In the meantime, I'm working for ABC. I'm doing this pilot.
That's good.
And we'll see. And I have another pilot that I'm working on with Doug Liman's company
oh, wow.
that we sold to UCP that because it's more of a cable project, mm-hmm. you know, we're going to get back to right now. I'm in the middle of, you know, network, which mm-hmm. has, a very short window. And then I have a couple of feature projects that, you know, with the success of the show, mm-hmm. some of the feature projects that I had worked on prior to the show.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I always tell everybody, you get that one thing going, and the people are like, what else
you
got?
Yeah. So there's some other exciting things that are going on right now and things that I'm meeting on mm-hmm. and a feature project of mine that I'm going to direct when all, you know.
Lisa won a one role where she says, yeah. There they go right there.
This, yes. The doctor can see you now.
Actually, Angela Bassett is doing that part.
And I'm like, darn it. Queen Angela's doing that part too.
I didn't know it was her. I just saw this woman at the lunch. I said, you want to do this one role? And she said, sure. And go figure.
She's going to milk that motherfucker too.
I've learned from the past that things don't happen until they do. So there's definitely exciting stuff going on.
Yeah,
but
definitely.
When it actually goes before the cameras, that remains to be seen. But in the meantime, I'm just enjoying working with terrific people.
Yeah, I'm thrilled for you because like I said, for Crackle, like, you've kind of set the standard for them. Like, you know, you guys were the template for, are we going to do some more of these scripted mm-hmm. things? And the fact that, you know, the show's done so well and it's like the second season, it's like, hey, you are a trailblazer, sir. Every other scripted show that comes through there is because of you and the success of your show. So I see more big things coming on.
Does that mean that I get residuals from those
other
shows?
I would hope so.
I don't think it's going to work that way.
I don't think it's going to happen.
I thought it was all created by you.
It's a nice feeling anyway.
I would hope so. But I know it's just exciting, like I said, to have talked to you last year and was it last year or the year before?
It was last year.
Was it last year? Because mm-hmm. I feel like 2016 was just so long.
you know? I think it was like end of 2015.
Yeah, like right the last part. Launched. And it was so like, I remember the excitement and you know, Just just keep sexy. Keep bringing the sexy, sir. Yes.
I do what I can. Yeah.
Even the Viola Davis show sounds like you can make that sexy.
Yeah, it has to be.
I think that's in you. There's something about the way you write. It's always going to be.
There's going to be that sexy, that tone of sexiness.
Well, his government handler. That's one change we did make in the book. It's a man, and for the TV show, we changed it to a woman.
Good.
So there is like a sexual tension between him and his handler, mm-hmm. even though, you know, he's married and he's happily married, but there's mm-hmm. that tension between people
yes. mm-hmm.
that are working together in something that they need to keep a secret.
That's what they call and that what, moonlight effect.
Mm. but once you're keeping a relationship a secret, even if it's for legitimate reasons, mm-hmm. it begins to take on yes. this kind of illicit feel yes. like, hey, are we doing something wrong? Even yes. if they're not.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so I like to play around with the ambiguity of things.
Ooh, I like the tension of that too. It's like, ooh,
it's
sexy.
Oh, Nando, thanks a lot, Chuck. We appreciate it, buddy.
Thank you.
Yes, exciting for you. Exciting.
Yeah, definitely. You got some
so
good
much
things
good
going
stuff
on.
Going on for you. Exciting.
Proud of you. Proud of you. So, can people follow you on Twitter?
Yes.
Where you
I'm
at?
I'm on Twitter. It's what is it, ChuckRose04. I know. I should know that, right?
he says with a question mark at the end.
Let me look it
Looking
up.
Looking at us like, is it that? I don't know.
I'm
is
on
it
Instagram.
Chuck?
I think it is. It's ChuckRose04 on Twitter. And on Instagram, it's ChuckRose7, I think. Well, I don't know because I don't follow myself. But you know, you follow me.
I know. It's like, I'm just sitting here because, you know, I have like a list of the writer people that we have come in. And like usually there's a little notification. So if you guys post something new, you know, I'll catch it. And it's like, I ain't got no notifications from you in like a minute. I'm like, is Chuck, is he on here? Like, is he using this, you know? But you're busy, but that's a good thing.
I'm not as tech savvy.
I just take it as being busy.
I am on Facebook and I am on Instagram.
Okay. Yeah, I see you on Facebook.
Yeah,
all the time.
Yeah.
For some reason, Twitter I still find daunting.
It's at ChuckRose4 mm-hmm. on Twitter.
Okay. And I'm on Instagram.
He might not respond to you, but he's on there.
Wait.
But Hilly's going to help me.
What's the last tweet he had on
there? You had one of the assistants just, you know.
I think it was from you guys or maybe.
It's all right. It's all right.
Oh, my God.
But we're going to be blasting it when it comes out.
I think when I met Ringo Starr at this auction last year, I think I tweeted that, and that might have been the last thing I met. I was like, that was pretty cool.
I think there was something about the Writers
Meeting a Beatle was pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it was because they had interviewed for the Writers Guild around Halloween, somewhere around there.
Yeah, I did the Writers Guild. That's and right. then I just did the treatment with Elvis Mitchell. I think I tweeted about that, but
yeah. That was a good one.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, I love it.
I think you did because that's the reason why Elvis that was the reason why I was happened to be listening to it today. Made sure mm-hmm. I had the radio on to listen to that.
Mm-hmm.
Cuz it's always fun.
And tell everybody again just where they can watch Art of More and looking forward to the new show and all that. Just to get
the Art of More, you can watch seasons 1 and 2 now. It's on Crackle. Mm-hmm. So any smart TV, it's the Crackle app. It's the bright orange app, so you can always find it. Crackle is free.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to subscribe to it, so you can watch both
No
seasons.
Excuses.
Yeah, there you go. Or just crackle.com.
Okay. Where are you at, Lisa?
You can always find me on Twitter.
Always.
Twitter shenanigans. Well, you know, the last couple, because I've been busy the last couple of months, but normally you can find me under the Geek Soul Brothers hashtag of Saturday Night Sci-Fi, mm-hmm. Bitch Flicks, writing film reviews. You can find me, I'm on Facebook, but I just tell, because I know a lot of people, I started getting like hits on Facebook. So like people, I don't really use Facebook. It's like for family to let them know I'm still alive. Check in with some folks, but really just hit me up on Twitter. Like Twitter is like
easy. See, I'm on
easy.
Facebook more than I am on Twitter.
No, and I like Twitter because Twitter is only 140 characters. Mm-hmm. Like I don't have time for the long, drawn out, say what you got to say in 140 characters and keep it pushing. So that's why I like Twitter. And plus, you know, when we live tweet those shows, I'm trying to tell you, if you have a TV show, you want to make sure your social media that you're on there because the fans, we be watching and mm-hmm. we be talking. And you can learn so much about your show and what people really think.
You can do
think.
That with one episode
just
one
episode,
time on your show.
Yeah.
Yes, please. Do whatever
you,
that is, whatever
you,
live tweeting is,
you know,
do it.
It's just, you know, and have... I need to start my own live tweet thing where we where we have martinis with Lisa.
We should do the Art of More just for him.
Yeah, and we'll dress up. Like, we'll put on our best clothes as we're going to an art auction. And everyone has their own...
Everybody
have
their finger
okay,
waves.
Everyone have your little finger and have your little number card that you could put up and, you know, take pictures of ourselves. Like, mm-hmm. yes, would you auction... As we watched the episode... would you buy that? Tweet yes or no. How much would you pay for that? But that's exciting. But yeah, you can always find me on there under Shenanigans.
Exactly. And I'm your host. I'm your host, Hilliard Guest. You guys can follow me on Twitter at Hilliard Guest. Follow the show, ScreenwritersRR, on Twitter. Any questions, ScreenwritersRentRoom@gmail.com. Big shout out to all the countries out there. We're just getting hits like crazy, like England and... I was about to say England and London. Hit that a bit.
England and London.
That's actually only one hit, I hate to tell you.
Australia, France, Italy, China, Japan, Canada, of course. That's always number two. Shit like that. We love y'all. We appreciate it. South Africa. The book I'm in, I don't know if I told you, I'm in the... They change it now from the top 50 to the top 100. Indie writers in the world. I'm on the cover.
Right.
And actually, they just came out with my interview today.
Nice.
So, yeah. So, that's cool. So, big shout out.
That's great.
Thank you. Thank you. Big shout out to Dale and those guys over there for that. There was something else I was going to mention. What else? Oh, I'm going to be on a panel of the Writers Guild on Tuesday night.
What's the panel?
I don't know when I'm bringing
What's
I might
the panel
drop
about?
This like a week or so. What?
What's the panel about?
Remember, I don't know if you ever met my friend Marie Weiss. She's the one who wrote The Ref.
Yes.
So she worked with like the Veterans Committee or something. So she called me the other day and asked me to come on a panel about young indie writers.
Nice.
You know, and filmmakers doing whatever.
Awesome.
So I'm going to go ahead and do that. So I won't be there on Tuesday for our education committee. He's like, oh, the education committee is on Tuesday.
I actually haven't been to Writer's Ed for a while.
You've been busy. You've been busy.
You got no job. He ain't doing nothing.
That's your story you're sticking to. I've been busy writing.
Exactly. I'll let you slide. I'll let you slide.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, y'all know how we're doing on the Rant Room. We love you guys on the show. We keep it real. We keep it opinionated.
But wait. One more again. Congratulations, Viola.
Yes.
I mean, I was like, you should have got that star years ago. That's just my humble opinion.
Come do the show, girl.
But love your work. Appreciate it. I'm so thrilled that you're working with Chuck. And I'm looking forward to the new show. And like I said, Viola, if you can just help Chuck make sure he keeps sexy on TV, I would appreciate it very much.
Exactly.
Thank you,
play
thank
the president,
you, Queen.
Girl.
Thank
play
you,
the president.
Queen. Thank you, Queen.
Exactly. So y'all know how we do it on the Rant Room. On the show, we keep it real.
Mm-hmm.
We keep it opinionated. We keep it what, everybody?
2017.
Say it again.
2017.
Peace, y'all.
Ciao.
Yeah, man, I got something to get off my chest.
Everyone got one. What's your opinion? This is the Rant Room. Tongues won't be bitten. Ain't no rules, just spill it. And anybody can get it. No limit. We get to kill it. You tuning into the thrillers. And no, ain't no stopping.
No.
Any topic, even the random.
We get to win.
I hope that you're ready. We entering in the zone soon. We on a grown shit. Welcome to the Rant Room.